Good morning. Today is Thursday, opening day of the county fair.
Yes, it is. And T-minus 6 days for the opening day of school.
Well, I thought as a board member you'd be more interested in the fair today.
I will be down there this evening.
Oh, are you a horse racing guy, or is this starting on out in the ag building?
Yeah, I'm more of a livestock guy, but I am. I will be down there for the barbecue, the horse race barbecue tonight.
Okay, now clarify real quick. That was horse race barbecue.
Correct. The barbecue not, at the horse races.
There you go. Okay, we're not. You saw where it was headed.
I did. Yes. I'd know better by now, huh?
Yeah. let's see. Our phrase. Why do they say that? Backup. What is the reason a person who becomes stubborn and angry is said to get his backup?
I would guess that it has something to do with, like, animals getting their hair up to make themselves look bigger or something like that.
The allusion is to the attitude of a cat when angry. It not only raises its hair, as do most animals, but it also arches its back.
Oh, so I got one.
You got 3/4 points on that one.
I'm impressed.
I'm stunned.
For a change, because I never get those.
Yeah. I could say I was stunned and amazed, but then there wouldn't be much of a show left if I had to start. Oh, my. So, let's talk fair real quick.
Sure.
What is the role of the fair board?
Well, the fair board is pretty much like any other board. We have a CEO of the fair, and then we have the fair board, and then it's the fair board's responsibility to set the overall picture and what's supposed to happen at the fair, and then it becomes the CEO's responsibility to carry out that overall vision and picture for the fair.
Now, this one's a little bit unique because it's county-owned property.
Correct.
Rather than like Redwood Acres that is owned by the state.
Right.
Does that put additional responsibilities onto the fair board and the fair staff, or is that something that Public Works handles and some of the areas of traditional responsibility you don't got to worry about?
Well, this fair board is it's really interesting because all the maintenance and everything like that is a responsibility of the Humboldt County Fair Association. And the Humboldt County Fair Association actually is not even a public agency. It's a nonprofit. And so there's a lot of confusion that flows around that. Since it is on a county property, there's assumption that it is a public entity. In reality,
now,
it's
who
not.
Would think that?
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, whoops. Yeah, thank you for letting me step into the mud, because I always feel so much nicer when I get it off of me.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes,
okay.
Yes.
Mud, not horse racing.
Right, right.
Yeah, okay.
Not the livestock end, yes.
Yeah, okay.
but yeah, there's some confusion that surrounds that. And so not being a public entity and being a not-for-profit organization, 501c3, means that it's just a little bit different. But we're still out there for the public good and representing the public good and putting on event for the public good.
Now, what is the responsibilities of the fair or the board based on that not-for-profit status? Because I know the facility is used pretty regularly by a lot of folks.
Correct.
Some are regular and some are the occasional events. And then you get like the Red Cross during the flood season and things of that nature.
It certainly is a disaster relief area, yes.
So how does all that kind of integrate itself?
Well, you have the regular uses like the arena down there. There's regular horse boarders. There's rentals that happen inside the facilities during the off season. Then you have your not so regular events that happen in some of the facilities down there, parties, different things, and so forth. So it just depends on what happens, and we review our rates regularly. But the primary mission of the organization is to put on the fair. That is primarily what we're about, is to put on an outstanding event for the county.
Is there any thought, Fred, to expand the use? I just flashed, the lack of convention or meeting space. Okay, you got River Lodge up to a certain amount. We've got now your buds at the County Office of Ed up to a certain level. But to really have something, a larger, more significant one, I mean, the footprint is there. Don't know if the use would be compatible with what's out there, though.
So I can only speak for myself, can't speak for the board or the organization, but speaking for myself, we're always interested in expanding and doing more down there. One of we just went through a strategic planning process, and one of the things is we would like to be one of the premier event centers here on the North Coast. One of the things that really hinders us in that is just the funding to figure out the facilities. Several years ago, when we went through the recession here in California, the funding to fairs was cut to basically nothing. And so the challenge then becomes to become self-sufficient. And that's basically what we have been working on, is becoming self-sufficient through the rental of facilities and the use of the fairgrounds, and then of course putting on the fair itself. One of the things that's great is we were actually recognized in the San Francisco Chronicle as one of the top fairs in the state, and that's I consider to be a real honor for us. And it's really is a nice little fair, and we're one of the last fairs around that has a horse races.
So with that desire, is there any kind of a vision? I mean, or is it initially looking at some of the structures that are in place and bringing them up to speed a little bit?
There's a lot of work to do on the facilities down there because those facilities, again, with the lack of funding to do some of the building of new buildings and bringing those facilities up to the standards that we'd really like them to be, that's something that we have to continue to work on and continue to strategize on how we can fund that. Because even though we have a basically no or low cost from the county, it still is
not PG&E.
It still is an expensive place to keep going.
It's 8:19.
Listen to 980 AM for the best music. ABBA, Neil Diamond, Barbara Streisand, Billy Joel, and the Fifth Dimension. The all-time best are heard every day, all day long on 980 AM. We are easy radio. Easy on your ears and easy on your mind. This is memory-making music, and you'll love the memories you create. Tune in and hear the best music. Easy radio, 980 AM.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Time. It is 8:24. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Fred Van Fleck. Fred, with the fair and some of the activity that does go on out there, are there, not restrictions necessarily, but are there boundaries that you really can't cross, even though you guys are in control of it? As I would think that there, if you wanted to put in Cape Canaveral, you know, a rocket launch, yeah, one ain't going to fly.
No pun intended.
Yeah, well, hopefully, yeah. And on the other hand, letting it go fallow isn't going to fly either. So you've got that huge range. You know, what is the sweet spot for the fairgrounds?
Well, you know, that's a great question. From my perspective, the sweet spot for the fairgrounds is events that bring in the community. It's really a community center for events to happen, whether that be the fair is the obvious one. We've done some monster truck things out there in the past. We've done some flat track racing, motorcycle racing out there in the past. Obviously, the horse races. That's really the type of thing that is a sweet spot is those events, the 4th of July firework type events, things like that. And some of the things we also have to consider, though, it's really right within the city limits of Ferndale, too. So we have to make sure that we're also good stewards of the land and then also good neighbors there as well. So we have to be reasonable in the type of events that happen there, but also have to be cognizant of it is an event center and make sure that we're using it for what it was truly intended to be used for.
Now, butts up against the high school, the softball field and the baseball field, is that the school or is that the fairgrounds?
You know where exactly where the property line? I couldn't say exactly, but I do know that we share facilities with them as far as them using some of our facilities for some of their events.
That's why I was wondering, you know, with some of the opportunity for fall baseball and spring baseball, if there might be something for games. You got the facility. Certainly, the horse race track isn't a horse race track all year long.
Right, right.
Turn it into a couple of ball fields and have some kind of a regional, non-big white ball, but small white ball events, because we don't have any of those in the area since so many of the baseball fields get converted over to soccer fields this time of the year.
That was actually one of the nice things that we recently did was put a new inside rail in, and on that inside rail, it's more portable, I guess you would say. In other words, it can be taken out and put back in much easier than the old inside rail could be. And so that gives more flexibility as far as the events and the different types of things that we can do at the facilities. And so it's always something that we're interested. Location is a challenge sometimes, figuring out exactly.
We might have to expand a parking facility.
Right.
Which, okay, if you got more utilization of the compound, why not?
I mean, right.
They kind of go hand in hand, don't they?
Yes, and here's one that people don't think about all the time, too. Accessibility to the fairgrounds is a challenge sometimes, too, because you have a restriction on size that can go over the bridge. And so that creates a challenge at some points as far as what we bring over there.
Huh. I'd never thought of that. So what would be too much?
Well, like, for instance, when we did the monster truck rally, one of the contestants who entered decided that he would stay with his bigger wheels coming over the bridge instead of downsizing to the appropriate size, and it created a little issue and clogged up the bridge there for a little bit, and so that creates challenges sometimes.
I thought those guys came over on trailers.
Yeah, they were on trailers.
Oh, but he still was hanging over the edge?
Apparently, yes. Yes.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's why you have Ferndale PD and the CHP, is to help those guys out.
Right. I'll help you out here. It was a really bad idea that he didn't take those wheels off. That's the best I got. It's 8:30 in the morning, so.
At some point, you need to self-filter. Yeah, that could be stable duty for you later on this week, huh? Do you think that most folks in Humboldt County really are aware of the size, the physicalness of what the fairgrounds really are?
I do, because we bring out a tremendous crowd for the fairs. And so I think there's a lot of folks that come out and see the fairgrounds at the fair time. We have a great lineup of entertainment this year. I think folks come out and have a great time at the fair. It's a nice, small, hometown, home county fair that I think people really enjoy attending. We have some great, I mean, if you think about it, what we have up here in Northern California, some great events. Just finishing up with the Fortuna Rodeo, went down to that. That draws in a tremendous amount of people. The car show that's down there in Fortuna, and then here in Eureka, the Arts Alive, and the Eureka just had another event for arts as well. The farmers markets that are happening, the concerts. There's a lot of things going on up here, a lot of different things to go out and do.
So does that make it tougher to become an event facility in Ferndale, or does that make it easier because folks are kind of in that rotation, so to speak?
Well, I think it's more difficult as far as location goes, but if we really stick to what our primary focus is and really focus on the fair and then talk about bringing in some of the other big events at off times, that's really what we're talking about.
So why does Cloverdale's fair, the Citrus Fair, so early? Any idea?
I have absolutely no idea.
It's like mid-February. It's the first one in the state.
Right, yeah.
You know, what? Huh?
Okay. Yeah, I don't know.
It must work for them.
It must. I mean, the fairs are all different times around the state, and some of the things that, you get into that conflict with school. And great example, opening day of school is going on during the fair.
Oh, he bridges nicely. Guess what we'll talk about when we come back.
Thank you. What could we do as a community to make Humboldt a better place to work and live? The answer is to make sure our kids are literate, able to plan financially, move forward in their education so they are better prepared to enter our workforce, and become contributing and productive members in our society, community, and economy. How do we do it? Through the Decade of Difference Initiative. Visit decadeofdifference.org and find out how you, as a parent, student, or business owner, can help. It's the Decade of Difference. Be part of it.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:35. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Eureka City Schools Superintendent Fred Van Fleck.
I'm now the superintendent.
You're
I'm
now the super duper. Yes.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Let's see. Chris Hartley was in on Monday and said that over the next 3 weeks, all schools begin. Okie dokie. I guess that is a solid reflection and indication that school boards are still alive and intact and empowered.
17,000 students in the county, 31 school districts.
Okay. 31 different schedules?
I wouldn't go so far as to say 31 different schedules, but many different schedules, yes.
Why the lack of unification? Just because of that autonomy?
That's a question you would have to ask each one of those individual school boards. You look out at some of the school districts that are in the surrounding areas that were originally born around a mill, and those school districts really thrived when the mills were out there, and as the mills and the timber industry really depleted, those schools didn't have the people and the population that lived in the area and the children to fill them up. So what they did was they started surviving off of kids and students moving out of town and being in those schools. And a lot of those little schools just like their autonomy and want to make sure that they stay there. And some of the fear that's out there is if a school district took us over, maybe they would shut us down. And so they want to make sure that their neighborhood school stays out there, and they want to make sure that they maintain control. And that's just
A survival, which makes sense. Mm-hmm.
Just my own opinion. I don't know if that's the actual case for all these school districts.
Well, busing still kind of has a nasty taste for a lot of people.
Even though
I rode a bus to school.
But the busing still happens, especially like if you look at Eureka City Schools. Once you get to the middle school level, we bus everybody into the middle schools from all those surrounding the five school districts that feed us. Actually, four of the five, because Neyland goes through eighth grade. But then once you get to the high school, they bus from everywhere.
How much does that cost?
The busing?
Yeah.
A lot. How's that for a quantifier?
Whoa! you mentioned Neyland, and occasionally you have to run up there because the tower is there.
Yeah, I cannot remember our busing budget straight off. It's several hundred thousand dollars. I can't tell you that. But we do have some agreements with Freshwater in Neyland about busing. And so we're actually busing some of their students to their schools. And so that way Greenwood Heights doesn't have a Freshwater bus going up at Eureka High School, bus going up it, and same thing up at Neyland. We don't have multiple buses going.
So there is some coordination.
Yeah. Correct. There is. There is.
So what is the biggie this year? What's the issue that you're looking to wrestle down?
Oh, there's so many. There's lots of things to talk about.
Who's number one on the pile? What's the elephant this year?
Oh, the elephant is the same as every year: student learning. And increasing student learning and making sure that we're providing the correct professional development for our staff at schools to continue that student learning. The thing that's just imperative in education is that students get a year's worth of learning for a year's worth of seat time. And we have to be consistent and maintain that and make sure that we don't have that achievement gap where students are falling behind in the learning of other students. And one of the things that just really is a battle with that is just getting students in their seats. And that is
just
something.
Just keeping the chair warm.
More than keeping the chair warm, because you can't teach a cold chair, obviously. So we have to have the student inside the chair in order to teach them. And one of the things that really plagues Humboldt County, if you look at chronic absenteeism. The California Department of Education defines a chronic absent student as someone who misses 10% or more of the school year. 180 school days. If you miss 18 days or more, and 18 days is basically 2 days a month, if you miss 2 days a month of school or more, you're chronically absent. The statewide average for chronic absence is about 10%. The countywide average is 15% here in Humboldt County. And so we have a problem with getting our students to school. And so that's something that we need to really think about, making sure that we get children to school. Because
is it getting them to school, Fred, or is it keeping them once they're there?
All of the above.
Because I know you know, things are tracked differently. When we were going through, it was attendance is taken at 8:30 or 8:45. Thank you very much. But then the funding started to change, and now it's every class. You know, I'm thinking of high school and junior high. Okay, well, things change a little bit. You know, if you got a dentist appointment or a doctor's appointment or something along those lines, okay, you're out for a little bit. If you've got a family event, you may be gone for a little. I mean, there are those dynamics that it's a much more granular now than what it was before. Does that make it easier to track or more challenging?
These numbers here, if they were here for 5 minutes of the day, they're counted as here. So these numbers,
so truly
the 15%
not showing up,
is you weren't even there for 5 minutes of the day. So that's the absent piece of that 15%. So if you showed up and then went to a dentist appointment, you're there.
You're an okay guy.
Yes.
Or gal.
Yes, yes, yes.
With a great smile. KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:41.
SoCal just got a whole lot closer. No, we're not talking about some big, scary geological event. It's way cooler and with much less tectonic shifting. Starting in June, flying to LA will be quicker than ever with United Airlines' new nonstop flights from Humboldt County. That's right, no stops between here and there. Ascend, descend, and you're landing, like in just a couple hours. So it's kind of like LA is just down the road a piece. So what are you waiting for? Check it out at flyhumboldt.org.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:46. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Fred Van Fleck. So, Fred, if absenteeism is one of the challenges right now, either for the youngster to get their education, for the system certainly, so that they don't get behind and have all the associated problems with it, what is the leading cause of absenteeism?
Well, there's really four categories that lead to those absences. There's barriers, negative school experiences, lack of engagement, or misconceptions. And the barriers are the pieces that relate, you know, illness, lack of health, mental health issues, vision, dental care, trauma, homelessness, unsafe path to school, you know, worried about their move to school, frequent moves by the parents, probation issues, involvement with child welfare services.
Kind of the stuff that most of us would go, yeah, okay, we get that one. We could come up with that one on our own.
Right, right.
Yeah, car breaks down, can't get to school.
Right.
Okay.
Then you have the negative experiences, which is, you know, academically struggling or socially struggling, bullying, suspensions at school. Those are also counted in absences.
Suspensions are?
Yes.
So when you're not allowed?
That's correct.
That also counts?
It does. It does.
Interesting.
And a negative school relationship with parents to their own school experience. So in other words, the parents don't think school's going to do any good.
That I would think would be have been more almost a historical. You know, I went through third grade, went out to the farm, and we farmed, and they were successful, but they never really got a high school degree.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
I mean, at least there's some logic in there.
Right. Right.
But that isn't the case of what you're talking about.
Well, that could be. I mean, that would be the parents' own experience and saying, well, you don't need to go to school because, look, I'm doing just fine. And I didn't go to school. So that's potentially possible as well. Lack of engagement. No meaningful relationship with adults at the school. So they just don't have that tie. I'm a huge advocate of finding something at school that's your passion, whether that's sports, agriculture, some club or something like that.
Or a teacher.
Mm-hmm. Or a teacher, unwelcoming school climate, failure to earn credits, or maybe no plans for the future. So you just, you know, school's not important to me because I don't really have anything that I want to do in the future. Long-term substitutes, you know, if we have a teacher out for maternity leave or something like that.
You know,
students don't have that tie to the teacher.
Is that really? When I went through, okay, more Pabstein reveal. When I went through Worthington, our second grade teacher was out for the entire year of medical. Okay, well, so we had a gal who was the substitute for an extended period. Okay, fine.
Well, you know what's interesting about that, though, is back in those days, as soon as, like, when my mom had me and my mom had my sister, my mom was teaching out at Scotia Elementary School. And when she had my sister, as soon as she started to show, she had to quit. She was not allowed to be pregnant in the classroom at all. That was taboo. And so, obviously, times have changed with that. And we've gone all the way to from maternity leave for the mothers to now we're at paternity leave for the fathers, the same amount of time for the mothers.
We're having the kids bring their babies to school. Give me a break. Another topic, another show. Thanks for coming by, bud.
Absolutely. Thank you.
See everybody tomorrow.